proto-punk to hardcore. On CFRC 101.9 FM.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
Good evening, it's 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Henry Walker, and Juliana Gonsalves. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie. Let's start off with your local news headlines. From a request for up to $350,000 just weeks ago, city staff returned to council Tuesday night with a very different plan for marking the 10-year anniversary of the Tragically Hip's final concert, one that requires no new funding from the city's reserve. Back in February, council deferred a decision on allocating up to $350,000 from the city's working fund reserve, following major concerns from both councillors and the community. City staff were asked to revisit the proposal. Now, a revised report brings forward a scaled plan, focused on already planned free accessible programming, funded through existing budgets, sponsorships, and external sources. With additional work over the past month, staff say all city-led programming can now be delivered without withdrawing on reserve funds. Support includes up to $100,000 from Tourism Kingston's Municipal Accommodation Tax Development Fund, along with $23,500 already secured through sponsorship, with more funding opportunities still being explored. Anniversary programming is now focused on expanding on initiatives already in place. When asked by council, city staff outlined how some of these events will take shape.
So the programming that the city is leading, outlined in the report, is twofold. So the first is a free music exhibition delivered through the Heritage Services Department. This is a broad music exhibition that has always been in the work plans, and that will be delivered throughout 2026 and 2027. Within that, there was an opportunity to align with the Tragically Hip anniversary, and so there is a section dedicated within that. So it's a broad music exhibition that is aligning where appropriate. The second is the free City of Kingston Rock in the Square concert that we deliver every single year in Springer Market Square. Given the celebrations and what we anticipate to be community interest, we are yet to announce the artist, but we will have some connection to the celebrations through this annual concert.
Additional programming that has been shared at this time also includes a downtown event later that weekend, new public art and murals, and a three-week run at the Kingston Grand Theatre of a new Canadian musical built around the band's catalog. Councillor Tozzo extended thanks to staff for revising the plan in response to feedback.
I just want to thank staff for listening to both council and the community, because I think that this sparked a little bit of concern about the appropriate use of funds. I'm very happy that the ask was reduced, that some of our partner groups and sponsorships are standing up. And I just want to reiterate, I love the Tragically Hip. I'm looking forward to celebrating this in a very financially responsible way. Thank you. Courage, it couldn't come at the worst time.
Council ultimately approved the updated approach, with Councillor Jeff McLaren casting the sole opposing vote. Staff will return to Council on June 16th with another update on programming as Kingston prepares to mark a decade since the Tragically Hip's final concert. After a decision at Council last night, the city will be looking into more eco-friendly alternatives to salt for de-icing roads. Councillor Ryan Boehm brought forward another winter road maintenance-related motion at last night's Council meeting, following a motion tackling plowing practices earlier this month. The motion asks that city staff prepare an information report that provides an assessment of alternative de-icing products, including operational performance, infrastructure requirements, cost implications, and environmental considerations. While sprinkling salt makes conditions safer for drivers and pedestrians, when all the chloride from that salt runs off into local waterways, it can be toxic for plants and wildlife, a concern that councillors have heard from constituents. The motion specifically mentions that councillors have received many inquiries regarding the potential use of beet-based organic additives, the alternative used in cities like Toronto, Kitchener, Waterloo, Cambridge, and Niagara.
Technologies change. Sometimes there's things that are more environmentally friendly. Sometimes they cost a lot more. So I've got multiple community inquiries about beet juice in particular. And so this is something where when I went to staff, essentially we don't have a lot of information on it. So the whole goal of this motion is to kind of go gather that information, see what other alternatives out there might be feasible, recognizing there may be cost constraints because the equipment might not be able to handle it. So, I mean, nothing beats having more information on things. So I hope this can be supported.
Council unanimously backed the motion after getting a few puns out of their system.
While it may look like I just fell off the turnip truck, I have heard from several constituents that the use of salt for ice management has them seeing red. And so I would really like to move forward with this.
I just don't think this motion can be beat.
Does anybody else have any jokes to make about number one?
Council will receive an information report by Q4 2026 with options to move forward. A long-standing arts organization in Kingston is entering a new chapter. Formerly known as Modern Fuel Artist Run Center, the organization has announced a new name and brand identity as it approaches its 50th anniversary next year. The organization traces its roots back to 1977, when it was first incorporated as the Kingston Artists Association. It was later renamed Modern Fuel in 1995, becoming a staple of the city's contemporary art scene. The organization will now move forward as Cultivate Art Commons, a rebrand reflecting a renewed focus on community-engaged artistic practice in Kingston while continuing its long-standing mission of supporting contemporary artists. Executive Director Maddie Andrews sat down with CFRC to talk about the change and what it signals for the future.
Well, to start us off, I was wondering if you could give us the backstory. What kind of prompted this decision to rebrand and why was now the right moment?
Absolutely. So this transformation has been years in the making. And it truly began to take shape during the development of our strategic plan in 2024. And so the strategic plan is set from 2025 through 2028. So this next chapter that we're in. And we developed it in collaboration with consultant Pavna Varma. And from the outset, we prioritized meaningful engagement. So connecting with our members through surveys and focus groups and consulting with community partners and key voices across the sector. And one theme emerged throughout our strategic planning process, an opportunity to strengthen our visibility and more fully express who we are. Community members encouraged us to deepen and develop our identity as a vibrant, inclusive art space here and expand our digital presence and better communicate the energy and purpose behind our work. So that was kind of phase one. And then with support from the Community Foundation for Kingston and area, we were able to move this forward in a meaningful way. So we received funding in the spring of 2025, and the board engaged BM Dodo Strategic Design as the consultant team we worked with on this project. And we selected them for their deep local knowledge and over 20 years of experience supporting organizations specifically in Kingston to guide this comprehensive exploration of our identity. And so throughout this process, research and community input remained really central. We shared a survey with our members and our key collaborators, inviting feedback on how our name and visual identity could better reflect our work, especially in today's more environmentally conscious context. So that's kind of where we took things. So one of the main themes identified was a need to be less intimidating and more welcoming to new members, emerging artists in the community as a whole. So there's a strong desire to be the creative hub that fosters connections where artists meet, collaborate, and build community. And to do this, we need to continually reach out, engage with people who have often never heard of us before. So this renewal allows us to support the next generation of artists and move into the future. Yeah, so it was an exciting process of engaging our community and then doing a lot of internal, like ongoing dialogue, reflection, and creative exploration as a board, working through multiple rounds of names and identity proposals. But each stage, it really involved revisiting initial community feedback, testing ideas, and refining directions to ensure that the outcome would authentically reflect our values and our future. And that led us to where we are today. So by late fall, we had kind of decided on a direction and a name. And since then, we've just been working hard behind the scenes to carefully develop and finalize things ahead of the exciting launch on Friday.
Awesome. Thank you for that background. And I was wondering if you could walk us through the meaning behind the name Cultivate Art Commons and how that kind of reflects the feedback you guys got and those discussions that you guys were having.
Absolutely. So the word cultivate, it reflects the care, time, and mentorship required to grow an artistic practice. And it really speaks to our commitment to nurturing artists and creative ideas and supporting work that contributes to the broader community. Commons, on the other hand, refers to a shared space belonging to everyone. So it signals that we are an open and accessible hub where artists and community members come together. And it also reflects the practical resources that we offer, like affordable workshops, shared tools, equipment rentals, and exhibition space. I guess I'd also just like to really reinforce that this change is not a departure from our past. It's more of a deepening of purpose and a clearer way of expressing what we've always done and who we've been to the community.
Awesome. Yeah. And what's going to stay the same for artists and audiences? And what do you think is going to kind of change as you move forward with this new identity?
Yeah, I think like at the core, we are the same organization. Like we are not erasing anything from our past. We are still hugely proud of who we are as an organization, especially going into next year, which marks our 50th anniversary. So it's really, like I said, about a deepening of purpose and allowing us to more clearly represent who we are to communities that we've not engaged with before. And it's really an opportunity to share our story more boldly and connect with new audiences, and then really just reaffirm our longstanding commitment to artists in this region. So I think like those are kind of the changes that people might see, and obviously some visual changes, but ultimately it's really a leaning into who we've always been and the work we do that is so important.
And you had your launch event on Friday. I was wondering if you could speak to some of the reactions you guys got when you revealed this new identity.
Absolutely. It was a warm, uplifting event. The room was filled with people who've been supporting us over the years and who've been so deeply engaged in our programming, coming to events, exhibiting with us, teaching with us even. So it was so wonderful to gather with these really important people for us in our community and celebrate with them and have them be the first to know. There was obvious surprise, but I think that everyone there was able to really recognize that like this is an important change or shift for us as an organization, and we're able to just kind of carry that excitement forward and know that this is something we're doing in the best interest of this organization that we all know and love and have known in the past as Modern Fuel, but will now be knowing as Cultivate Art Commons. And I think that, yeah, there's just, you could really feel the love for this organization in that room that night. And the commitment to wanting to ensure that it's around for the next 50 years. And this is part of that strategy. So yeah, it was just a really beautiful celebration.
Once again, that was Maddie Andrews, Executive Director of Cultivate Art Commons. As Andrews said, while the name is changing, the organization's core mission remains the same: supporting artists through exhibitions, mentorship, workshops, and access to creative resources. That wraps up your headlines for this evening. Next up is Henry Walker with your Queen's Campus News.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. You are listening to your Queen's Campus Beat, Queen's Campus News, here on CFRC 101.9 FM or online at cfrc.ca. I'm Henry. Newly released annual policy report indicates measurable improvements in student mental health at Queen's University. The report, published March 20th, highlights progress in student well-being indicators compared to previous years, suggesting that recent investments in mental health services and institutional supports are having an effect. While specific metrics were not fully detailed in initial coverage, the report contributes to ongoing institutional conversations around student support systems, particularly as demand for counseling and wellness services has increased significantly in the post-pandemic period. At its March 6th meeting in Richardson Hall, Queen's Board of Trustees addressed mounting financial pressures facing both the institution and its students. Discussions focused on external constraints, including changes to the Ontario's Student Assistance Program, OSAP, as well as global instability affecting enrollment projections. Trustees also approved a residence fee increase, adding to concerns about affordability. These discussions come as Queen's continues to manage a projected budget deficit, with financial sustainability increasingly shaping administrative policy and long-term planning. The annual St. Patrick's Day Aberdeen Street Gathering on March 14th resulted in approximately $2,000 in bylaw fines, according to reporting published on March 20th. Kingston Police noted that student behavior was largely respectful, a shift from previous years where enforcement levels were significantly higher. The event remains unsanctioned, but this year's outcomes suggest continued efforts to reduce harm and improve relations between student and local authorities. In other news, Queen's has launched the AgeWise AGEWISE Institute, a new interdisciplinary initiative focused on healthy aging research. Announced on March 20th, the Institute aims to bring together expertise across health sciences and policy fields to address the challenges posed by Canada's aging population. The initiative reflects a broader national priority as demographic shifts increase pressure on healthcare systems and long-term care infrastructure. Additionally, students are actively working to document and preserve queer history at Queen's through a new archives-focused academic course. The initiative, reported March 20th, involves students researching LGBTQ+ histories on campus while broader discussions continue within the Alma Mater Society about how to institutionalize and expand that work. The project represents a shift towards student-led archival work with an emphasis on formalizing histories that have been often excluded from institutional records. And finally, an exhibition titled Art and Solidarity, held in Wallace Hall at the John Deutsch University Center, JDUC, is showcasing Iranian art and culture expression. The event, featured March 20th, transforms the space into a site for both artistic display and political reflection, highlighting themes of resilience and identity within Iranian communities. The exhibition situates Queens within broader global conversations around art, diaspora, and political expression, while also emphasizing student and community engagement with international issues. I've been Henry with your Queen's Campus Beat. Thank you for listening.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Wednesday, March 25th, daytime high of -1, but in the sun, it's going to feel a little above zero, right around 3 degrees, dropping down to -8 overnight. Thursday, March 26th, daytime high of 7, but with the rain in the forecast, it's going to feel closer to 2 degrees. Friday, March 27th, we have got a cold, sunny day here in the city of Kingston, daytime high of -3, overnight low of -11, but in the sun, it'll feel closer to -1. Saturday, March 28th, daytime high of -2 with periods of sleet and freezing rain in the forecast. Sunday, March 29th, back above zero for the first time in a few days. Daytime high of 3 degrees, periods of sun and cloud mixed throughout the day. And then starting off next week, more cold weather in the winter that never ends. Daytime high of -2. It will be sunny, so we could feel temperatures nip above zero, closer to 4 degrees in the sunshine. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. As a reminder, overnight street parking restrictions have been eased as of March 1st.
You can park overnight on marked areas unless the weather conditions require it, i.e. think the heavy accumulation of snow or icy rain. All overnight street parking restrictions will be lifted as of April 1st. In terms of road closures, Berry Street to Queen is still closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Aberdeen from Johnson to William is currently closed to accommodate construction activity and staging in the area. And lastly, you can expect delays on Front Road to Sand Bay Lane for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Please be aware of lane shifts, traffic speed limits, and share the lane signage.
Does the present moment really exist? Or is it just a boundary between the past and the future? I'll let you guys sit on that one. What's up, everyone, and happy Monday. It's your girl, Gigi, CFRC's newest intern, and you're listening to What's Live at 5 on CFRC 101.9 FM. Coming up on this segment, I've got K-Town's hottest concert and event calendars for the week, starting with events. As for Wednesday, March 25th, how many hours of sleep do you get every night? I really do prioritize my sleep, and I aim for 8 to 9 hours because I require lots of sleep in order to function. That said, sleep is a foundational pillar of lifestyle medicine and a powerful determinant of cognitive performance, emotional resilience, immune function, and long-term disease prevention. Visit Sleep as a Restorative Force, Why We Sleep, at 15 Arch Street School of Medicine Building at 12:30 p.m. to 1:30 p.m. On a side note, I know a really beautiful piece of music called Sleep by Eric Whitaker. You should definitely take a listen. Board games at Something in the Water Brewing Company at 5 p.m. until 8 p.m. Not a board game, but recently I've been playing Imposter with my friends, but I absolutely suck at it. So if anyone's got any tips, please do let me know. The Wonderful Women Community Choir will be meeting at Crossroads United Church at 1 p.m. until 3 p.m. No experience necessary and all ages welcome. On Thursday, March 26th, learn about responding to disclosures for staff and faculty, an online webinar at 10 a.m. until 11:30 a.m. Are you a new mother? Thriving after birth, physical activity, behavior, and sleep during the first year postpartum, Thrive 365, shares recommendations from the Canadian Guideline for Physical Activity, Behavior, and Sleep throughout the first year postpartum, along with practical tips to support recovery, energy, and well-being. Designed for Queen staff who are postpartum, supporting someone postpartum, or simply interested in female health, this talk will translate research into realistic, compassionate guidance for daily life in the first year after birth. By the end of this session, you'll be able to describe how movement, sedentary time, and sleep interact to influence recovery and well-being in the first year after birth. Further, you will be able to recognize common postpartum changes and identify when additional support may be helpful. Join online at 11 a.m. until 12 p.m. Have you ever heard of Lizzie Borden? Let me give you the rundown. Basically, this girl took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. Or did she? Check out Blood Relations at the Kingston Grand Theatre, Homestead Baby Grand Theatre at 7:30 p.m. On to my favorite time of the week, Friday, March 27th, Slayed by the Sword drag show. Four drag artists find themselves in the medieval times. It's up to the audience to choose wisely so they can escape the story alive. Drop by the 19 plus event at the Grad Club at 7 p.m. In the meantime, the Snowden Comedy Tour will be taking place at the Kingston Grand Theater Rosen Auditorium at 7:30 p.m. And of course, don't miss Friday night karaoke at the Buckle at 9 p.m. On Saturday, March 28th, we start early. Visit Butter Tart Shoe at 1250 Italia Lane, 9 a.m. Check out the Kingston Fiber Artist Annual Show, Art Threads 2026, at the Tet Center at 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. And afterwards, head on over to St. Michael's Ukrainian Church as they're hosting their third annual Easter Bazaar at St. Michael Ukrainian Church at 12 p.m. until 3 p.m. On Sunday, March 29th, this one goes out to my fellow students. Looking for some motivation as we approach exam season? Drop by Get It Done, a comfy space to settle in and get work done. Find us at Mitchell Hall, room 215, at 12 p.m. until 7 o'clock p.m. Ready for some more dance? Q QCDT presents Encore at the Kingston Grand Theater Rosen Auditorium at 7:30 p.m. Get your tickets before they sell out. Swing by the Memorial Center Farmers Market at Kingston Memorial Center grounds at 9 a.m. until 1 p.m. for fresh foods and to show your support to local vendors. And of course, you know what Sunday means, Sunday Fun Day at the museum at Great Lakes Museum at 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Have an event you would like to add to our online and on-air event calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. Next up, our concerts calendar. On Wednesday, March 25th, we've got Wings and Tunes with Sean McCullough at the Cove Inn at 5 p.m. until 8 p.m. Recently, I tried Thai wings and they were very good. If you haven't already given them a try, they're sweet and I would recommend. Catch Christopher Jackson at the Creekside Bar and Grill at 6 p.m. until 8 p.m. There's a free jazz series in support of Partners in Mission Food Bank featuring Oscar Evans at Something Else Records at 3:30 p.m. And catch DJ Great White with anything from 60s, 70s, 80s, soft rock, soul, R&B, and new wave pop. If that's your vibe, join him at Hotel Wolf Island at 4 p.m. until 7 p.m. If you're looking for an early weekend, I've got lots in store for you. On Thursday, March 26th, drop by the Sugar Shack Party featuring Henry Norwood and Sean McCullough at the Cove Inn at 5 p.m. And after that, head on over to the Creekside Bar and Grill for Donnie Cooper at 6 p.m. If you still want more, Micah Garvin will be performing at Lakeside Bar and Grill at 7 p.m. And lastly, don't miss Culture Reject at Musiki Cafe and Whiskey Bar at 8 p.m. Now to officially start off the weekend on Friday, March 27th, if you're still standing from Thursday, then check out Still Standing, a pop rock indie band at the Merchant Tap House at 10:30 a.m. Now I don't have Purple Rain for you, but I do have Purple Diamonds. Give them a holler at Timeout Bar and Bistro at 6 p.m. Interested in $5 dates? No, seriously, don't miss the pop rock indie band, $5 dates, at Spearhead Brewery at 7 p.m. Mr. Christopher Jackson is all around K-Town this weekend. Catch him again, this time at the Caesar Company at 8 p.m. Oak Ridge Avenue will be performing at the Toucan at 10:30 p.m. And Let's Meet in the Middle, 2026. A late night dance party at John Dutch University Center, Queen's University at 12 a.m. Moving on to Saturday, March 28th, Led Zeppelin meets Pearl Jam. Find out how at the Kingston Grand Theater Rosen Auditorium at 7:30 p.m. The Queen's University Chorus will be hosting their spring recital. Come out and support at the Spire at 3 p.m. Over on the island, swing by Dizzy and Faye at Hotel Wolf Island at 6:30 p.m. Impish Grins will be performing at the Merchant Tap House at 10:30 p.m. Maybe some wings while you're there? Looking for some blues tunes? Check out Free Association Blues Band at the Toucan, also at 10:30 p.m. To close off the week on Sunday, March 29th, catch Spencer Evans at Timeout Bar and Bistro at 7 p.m. And afterwards, head to the island for Nick Schofield, Liam Cole at Hotel Wolf Island at 8 p.m. Little far for you? No worries, spend some time at the Merchant Tap House for karaoke starting at 8 p.m. And lastly, I would strongly encourage you to visit the Queen's University Orchestra and Choral Ensemble present Dan Forrest's Creation. This is a beautiful piece, and if you're only going to see the Choral Ensemble and Orchestra once, let it be this time. Find them at the Isabel Bader Center for the Performing Arts at 2:30 p.m. until 4 o'clock p.m. Have an event you would like to add to our online and on-air event calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. No matter what you're into this week, music, food, dancing, or just pretending you have your life together, I've got you covered. For more details on all these events, check out cfrc.ca or lock in right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. You're listening to GG on CFRC Radio, and from me to you, have the best week ever, be safe, be kind, and I'll catch you next week.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and listen on the go, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
Yo, Ellie.
Hey, Nate, what's up?
We're on the radio.
What? Like right now?
Yeah, it's a promo from Live Sessions.
Oh, yeah, CFRC Live Sessions, Thursdays at 11 a.m.
Listen to sexy bands play live on air and hear exclusive interview highlights.
Sounds awesome. Tune in on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Lit. Okay, peace out, dude.
See you Thursday.
Les rendezvous de la francophonie are underway. From now until March 31st, recharge your batteries francophone style and enjoy shows, contests, local activities, and free film screenings. Check it out on rvf.ca.
Le rendezvous de la francophonie is back for 2026. My name is Catherine Fisher, and I interviewed 8 Canadians for the Franco podcast. In this episode, I spoke with Julia Chanoux, an independent journalist, content writer, and motorbike adventurer. Her blog, Julia on a Bike, details 2 recent cross-Canada trips in 2023 and 2024. Originally from France, Julia now lives on the Sunshine Coast in British Columbia. Julia spoke about her experience in community radio, journalism, and media relations, as well as what brought her to Canada and the kindnesses she experienced in her travels. Here's our conversation. So Julia, what inspired you to work in journalism and media?
I think that as far as I can remember, media have like always been in my daily life. When I was a child, I remember being fascinated by the CD radio in my parents' very old car. I also remember my father, it's very cliche, bringing back croissant on Sunday and bringing back Sunday newspapers, which included at that time the sports edition that my brother and I would argue on who would read the first. And I guess that I just keep it there as a habit to listening to local and national news, to reading news as well, printed mostly. Like at 20 years old, I used to have subscriptions to Time Magazine and Courrier International, which gathers news from other countries but translated in French. And to me, it was really like a hobby. I think that I wanted to basically know what was happening and where it was happening, whether it was here in my home country or far away. I just wanted to be informed about topic of interest, whether culture, sports, politics, and just about things that I didn't necessarily know about and that I was just ready to discover. And I think that I was so curious about many things that for me, all type of media would be able to nourish that curiosity. And that really what led me to working in the media industry.
Could you talk a little bit more about working in the media, how that started, where it went, what you've liked and didn't like about it?
Yeah, so I was first a host and a reporter for a campus station back in France, where I was covering topics that I liked. Again, I'm coming back to that, like from culture to politics. And being at the campus station of my business school really gave me an opportunity to share about all of my interests. And it was a way for me to go back to my community. So it was students, but it was really a way to share about everything and anything, but about stuff that were of interest to me and that I thought could be of interest to the public as well. I also worked temporarily as a web journalist to cover the FIFA World Cup in 2014, and then the European Football Championship 2 years later, 2016. That was a volunteer position, but again, that was a way to keep myself informed about what was happening on the field, but also to keep informing and to use a particular tool because we were reporting online, and that was a way for me to discover how to do journalism online, because again, I had only done radio, and so now I was discovering a new way of practicing journalism. And before I came back very recently into that journalism field, I've had a gap of almost 6 to 7 years, where I chose to go into media relations and communications. And I wanted to sharpen a few skills, like whether they were technical, like how to write something that's going to be striking to the public, but also some more soft skills, like how to negotiate, how to foster and nourish relationships with journalists when I was a media relations officer. And I just thought that going into the other side of the mirror, like the other side of the media industry, would help me in the near future when I would have the opportunity to go back to journalism, precisely.
And what brought you to Canada?
That's a very long story, but I'm going to try to keep it short, though. I think that I've had for a very long time a strong desire to explore a country that intrigued me. So just a bit of background, I come from Normandy in France, and I've been surrounded my whole childhood and adulthood by Canadian flags and Quebecois flags, because I've grown up in Juno Beach, so where the Canadian Army landed, and I've always been intrigued by the Canadian culture. And I had the opportunity to study in Ottawa 10 years ago. And when you're a student, you don't necessarily know what you want, nor you know where you will be in 10, 5, not even 2 years. But I knew when I left Canada that I was missing on something. Ottawa was not Canada. And even though I had visited Montreal and Quebec City, that was still not enough to understand the country, the cultures, and the geography. So it took me a while to get a visa to go back to Canada to work and to travel as well. But in 2023, I got selected and was offered a travel and work visa. And that was kind of a dream coming true. I was allowed to come and to come for work and or travel as I would wish. And before coming, so I arrived almost 3 years ago in Canada for my 30th birthday. And during the four months where I prepared my arrival in Canada, I was reading lots and lots of books, travel books from people traveling the world, either by motorcycle, by van, by bicycle, with a backpack, alone or with a group. And it just struck me. I think around February, 3 years ago, it struck me. I wanted to do that. I wanted to explore. I wanted to know more about this country that I had dreamt about for years. And in addition, I wanted to shed light on a community that I think has suffered from some cliche. And here, I'm talking about the motorcycling community, because back then in France, I had my motorcycle license. And I knew that I wanted to know about fellow riders, about their lives, their experiences riding in this big country. And I wanted to hear stories that then I could share. So that's what I did with my blog. And that's really what brought me to Canada, like a will to explore and discover, a will to meet with other people to know about their story, and a will to share about my own experiences as well.
So you must have met potentially hundreds of people on your trip. What sticks with you about, like, the people you met or the places you saw?
I think that the first thing is really I got a better understanding of this country, of the history, of the current state as well. I'm talking about political state, cultural state. I got a better understanding of the size and the geography, and a better understanding of the mix of cultures. Really, I insist on the plural here. And of course, I understood about the presence of Francophone communities all around the country, because before I arrived, I didn't really understood what being Francophone in Canada meant, except from people living in Quebec. And from all people that I met, I know that what will always stick with me is the incredible kindness that I've received from all those who hosted me, who shared bits of their lives, who accepted to tell me their stories so that I could publish them on my blog, and all those people who also just helped me when I least expected it. Just an example, I was stuck on the east coast of Labrador before taking the ferry to go to Newfoundland, to the island, and some guy just randomly helped me because I had kind of torn my knee, and he helped me get a hotel room, bought my ticket to get to the ferry. And I know that maybe it had something to do with the fact that I was a traveler and the fact that I was riding a motorcycle, but I also know that it's just, or I also understood that it's just kindness that arises from a human being towards another human being. And I think I was also looking for something like that, even though I wouldn't have admitted that when I prepared my trip to Canada, but I think I was still expecting some kind of, I wanted to witness some good in the world, and I managed to receive lots of kindness, and that's something that I can never forget.
Have you traveled elsewhere in the French-speaking world?
I've only traveled in France and a bit in Spain. So traveling in Canada was really my biggest experience. It was my longest experience as well. And other than that, I think that I would be ready to repeat the experience again, to meet with other Francophone people and Anglophone people, because I realized that among all the people that I met, there were many who came from a Francophone background. Parents or grandparents were either from Quebec or Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, or from France, but they had given up on learning French language, and they kind of put aside their Francophone culture. And I was a bit sad to hear about that, but I understood that, unfortunately, that's also how one culture sometimes takes over the other. And it's not easy when you're coming from different culture to have the perfect balance between the two of them.
The theme of this year's Rendezvous de la Francophonie is activate your Francophonie. How do you activate your Francophonie in your everyday life?
So the French language is how I met with my fiancé, and with whom I speak English and French every day. And one thing that we both realize is that speaking French and English allow us to express ourselves sometimes in a better way using one language or the other. And it allows us to explore ways to express ourselves, to find the best word to describe the situation or the expression that is more meaningful when we want to use it. And that's how the language itself is very helpful on a daily basis. And I also want to underline the fact that I'm living in an English-speaking community. So there is a Francophone community that is quite small, but I am very proud to witness every day that things are implemented for Francophone people to thrive, even though they don't necessarily have all services available in French. But at least we try to promote the French language and to promote everything that will make the culture still available to anyone who wants to share and to use it. There are lots of events which are organized in French or with Francophone, or where Francophone participants can feel like they are part of something. And that's really what I like about that Francophone culture, is that you can find Francophone people everywhere, even though you're in a far and remote community, and you're always quite proud of their background and of their culture. And whenever they can, they are making something so that we won't forget about it.
And thank you so much for talking to me, Julia.
Thank you very much, Catherine.
That was my conversation with Julia Chanu, an independent journalist, content writer, and motorbike adventurer. This has been the RVF Franco Podcast 2026. Thanks for tuning in. Le Rendezvous de la Francophonie is back for 2026. My name is Catherine Fisher, and I interviewed 8 Canadians for the Franco podcast. In this episode, I spoke with Rosie Kasongo, program coordinator for the VIF, a new dialogue network funding program. Rosie is from the Democratic Republic of Congo and now lives in the Greater Ottawa area. Rosie spoke about the VIF program, how being multilingual can help us build empathy, and her love of French rap music. Here's our conversation.
Rosie, you are the program coordinator for the VIF program, a new program for French-speaking youth being delivered by the Dialogue Network. Can you tell us about the VIF and its goals?
So the VIF program is stemming from the Government of Canada 2023 and 2023 Action Plan for Official Language through Canadian Heritage. And the VIF program, which stands for Programme de Valorisation d'Initiative Francophone, it's in French. But in English, it's going to be like Francophone Initiative Promotion Program, as its main objective to fund initiatives that provide young people aged between 14 to 13 with opportunities to come together, to exchange, to support one another and engage in French in person. So the activity must be in French, the activity must be in person, and it's for youth between 14 to 13 years old. And like I already talked about before the M, but I'm going to just, you know, say it in detail. The first one is to bring together young people through activity in French to strengthen their linguistic security and sense of belonging. The second one is to create exchange with youth from different linguistic communities to foster cooperation and appreciation of Canada's official languages. And the third one is to increase support for the learning and use of French in daily life, especially for youth whose first language is not French. And the last one is to encourage youth participation in civic and social engagement in French. This program, we have 2 streams. The first one is for organization, and the second one is for immigrant for youth-led activity.
The VIF microgranting program starts soon. What projects are eligible and who can apply?
Yeah, for who can apply, I'm going to say that to be eligible for this microgrant, youth must be between 14 to 13 years old at the time of submitting the application, to be legally authorized to work in Canada, be a Canadian citizen, permanent resident, or a person who has been granted refugee status in Canada, and to the youth must agree to be matched with a non-profit organization of your choice, which with will be responsible administering the fund and supporting the youth in implementing their project. And what kind of activity? First of all, the activity must take place in person, must take place in Canada, must be conducted in French, and must target youth age between 14 to 30 years or a specific age group within this range. And the activity must demonstrate a direct link to the program objectives, and the activity must be complete no later than March 31st, 2027. And what kind of activity must be? This is an example, so youth can just, they can be other type of activity, but the activity can be a discussion on a topic of the choice of youth, a discussion circle and film screening and after that, like a discussion, a book club and podcast lunch like this, and a workshop and conference. Sport activity, creative workshop, culinary workshop, networking event, open mic night. Like it can be like different type of activity, but it's up to the youth to choose what kind of activity and what kind of, you know, with the objectives of the VIF program, you know.
about you. What languages do you speak, and how and why did you learn them?
Okay, I speak French. I think I learned French, my gosh, since I was a little baby. You know, it's not my first language, but it's not my second one. I'm like, you know, yeah, something that I have a word relationship with French because I speak it since I was a little baby. After that, I speak Swahili. It's my first, you know, my mother tongue, because I'm from Democratic Republic of Congo, and so I speak Swahili, and I learn it at home, but also in school, because the first part of my classes, you need to learn to speak Swahili, but like the literature one, you know, how to say this word, like, yeah. And I speak Spanish also. Yeah, I learned it at school also. And I have the chance to have many friends from who speak Spanish. And so I practice too much and have some conversational classes until now. And because I really love Spanish. And I travel a lot, like in Spanish country, because I just want, you know, to practice and to know more about their culture. I can say that I speak a little bit Japanese, but not too much, because I love manga. And I learned the first one. I think I'm level one in Japanese, the basic one. But I can have a conversation, I can, you know, introduce myself and ask for something, but I need to practice more. But I don't have the chance to do it. And I speak English also, and I learned that at school also. And after that, I just practice, you know.
So when you were in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, you learned Swahili, Spanish, French, and English?
Yeah. I don't speak Lingala, one of the languages in Congo, but I listen, so I can understand when someone speak Lingala, but I'm going to just, you know, respond in French or in other language, but I can, you know, I have a big accent in Lingala, and I was scared when I was young, because every time I try to speak Lingala, people just, you know, talk about it and say, you have an accent in Lingala. So I think I didn't have the chance, you know, to practice, because I feel they, like, you know, are people gonna just laugh about my accent. But, you know, maybe I'm gonna try again to do that.
How is speaking more than one language enriched your life?
I think it's amazing. Like, because one other thing is that have the chance to have many opportunities to read different kind of books. You know, sometimes when I go to in the library, I'm going to just see, okay, do you have this one in French? If they don't have in French, I'm going to say, which language do you have? So I can read books in different language. I can listen to music in different language. And I think that the fact that I speak many languages helped me to be, you know, I don't know, like to be more sensitive, you know, because I know that it's not my first language. Like, I'm afraid to speak, like, when I can speak English, but, you know, sometimes I'm afraid to say some word, because I'm like, is it the pronunciation right? Or, you know, so to know that, to experience that, help me to understand when other people speak another language, because I'm like, okay, maybe they have an accent, maybe they don't say the word as it should be, but they speak one language that I don't speak. So they can speak French, English, Spanish, or Vietnamese, or other language, things that I don't know. So I'm like, I'm more sensitive and more understanding, and I'm so proud to, you know, I can switch this language. Last year I was in Peru for my holiday, and when I went there, you know, I speak Spanish, And after that, just, you know, when I come back at the airport, I was like, some people was struggling because it was their first time to be in Canada. And that was like, oh my gosh, you know, can you tell me where is this kind of thing? And I was like, oh yeah, I can do that for you because, you know, I speak French and Spanish and English and Spanish, so I can translate it for you. I can help you in this kind of things. And even when I'm in Peru, same thing, you know, I can be there and, you know, speak Spanish without, you know, without the fear to do it. And maybe sometimes I'm going to ask people if I need some really good translation, you know, something like I don't know, I can ask, but I can do it by myself. And I'm just so proud to do that. And it's kind of a thing that people should do that.
So, of course, the theme of this year's Rendezvous de la Francophonie is activate your Francophonie. How do you activate your Francophonie in your everyday life?
Okay, I'm going to say I work in French, but not only my work, but I love French rap. Like, it's like, I think the music is one of the things that I love the most. Then French rap and podcasts. I have like a list of podcasts in French already, and music also. I think I listen more French rapper music than English one or Spanish one. So I'm going to say that. And I do activity in French, like to go in theater or museum, you know, in French. And I had the chance also to have my friends. And we have like a book club, a French book club, so we see each other online, and, you know, we read together and talk about the book that we read before. So yeah.
So of course, March is the month of the Francophonie. Do you have special plans to celebrate?
Yeah and no. Yeah, because we're gonna have the lunch. We're gonna launch on February. So I'm like, okay. You know, it's kind of a thing. But after that, we have, I'm going to have, you know, there are too many things to do in March. And I hope to go everywhere I can in Ottawa, even in Quebec, because I have the chance to have my family in Quebec. So sometimes I just go in Quebec. But I think the Rendezvous de la Francophonie has on our website, there is a calendar of activity that's going to happen in March. So I'm looking forward to see that. So I'm going to just, you know, see what kind of activity I can do. But I think it's going to be like more theater because I love theater, or something like, you know, discussion or music team. I don't know yet, but I look forward to see the calendar of the Rendezvous de la Francophonie and to go see what's going to happen in Ottawa, even in Quebec, or I don't know, maybe in another city if I have the chance to be in another city. But yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you, Catherine, for the invitation.
That was my conversation with Rosie Kasongo, Program Coordinator for the VIF, a new Dialogue Network funding program. Find out more details about the VIF on the Dialogue Network's webpage. This has been the RVF Franco Podcast 2026. Thanks for tuning in.
Le Rendezvous de la Francophonie is underway. From now until March 31st, recharge your batteries Francophone style and enjoy shows, contests, local activities, and free film screenings. Check it all out on rvf.ca.
The Office of VP Research offers undergraduate students meaningful opportunities to engage in discovery-based learning and to develop research and presentation skills through their Undergraduate Student Summer Research Fellowship and the Undergraduate Student Research Award. Do you self-identify as a Black or Indigenous person? There are allocated funds through the USRA to help address the disproportionate underfunding of Black and Indigenous scholars at the undergraduate level. All projects are paid full-time work under the guidance of a faculty researcher and run from May through August. Application intake and deadlines are set by each department, so contact your department supervisor today. Application intake and deadlines are set by each department, so contact your department or supervisor today. Access the website to learn more, queensu.ca/VPR/resources/undergraduate. For general inquiries, contact Tracy Allen at allent@queensu.ca.
You're listening to 101.9